While I have been listening tonight to your friend read extracts from the book by Mr. Kate, and the comments that both made on the same, their 569, was suggested to me a text upon which I will write, and that is the spirit and the spirit body as to their nature and creation. This planned message was never delivered. I know that you have received writings dealing more or less with the subject, but I desire to enter more into detail in order to show that the writer of the book is all wrong in his conception of these things. Of course, you will remember Jesus' message on the soul, and it will not be necessary for me to say anything about the soul, but you can read my message in connection with that message. As Mark has just written you, it is a great pity that a man in the position of a teacher of spiritualists should not know more of the truth so that he may disclose it to those who may listen to him and have confidence in his knowledge. And it may be that at some time you will have the opportunity to read both messages to him, and the result may be he will seek for the truth in the way that shall be pointed out, and when he does so, in earnestness he will find it and make his find a blessing to many with whom he may come in contact. It is very unfortunate that a leader of this great truth of spiritualism, and it is a truth and one that will ultimately supersede the old religions whenever it comes into contact or association with people who think for themselves, should have such little knowledge of what a true understanding of it would enable them to teach. We spirits have for a long time endeavored to enlighten these leaders and at times have been able to impress upon them some of the vital truths, but these efforts have not been very successful until now, when we are to deliver our messages through your writings. But this endeavor will become more and more earnest or successful in the future, and many of these people who are anxious to learn the true religion and are waiting only for some authoritative source will learn, and among them will be many leaders of what is now called spiritualism. The work is one that must become worldwide in its results, for the soul of every man on earth, no matter where he may be, is worthy to be saved, and, as you know, if the start towards regeneration can be made on earth, the progression in the spirit world will be so much more rapid. I know that the spread of the truth will take much time, but when the commencement is made the progress will become more rapid. I do not think that I should write more tonight, and will only add that the evangelization must start very soon, and those who work to start the truth on its way to the knowledge of men must put all their energies and love into the work. You, the Paget Messages 1917, know that now there are very few, only three, Dr. Leslie R. Stone, Eugene Morgan and James E. Paget, who have any conception of the truth and what the plan is for the making known of these truths to the world. Yet Christianity was started by only one besides the Master, I mean John the Baptist, and he, as I must tell you, did not have the knowledge of the truth as you three have this day, and did not have behind him the power of the celestial heavens, as you have. His mission was performed, and Christianity would have been a success if its truths had not become lost and perished by the acts of men who did not have in their souls the love that has been given to you. The truths perished, and men perished as far as their souls' salvation was concerned, to a large extent. But now these truths will not perish because they will be presented in living type, and no copying or recopying will be needed, and no addition will be made to, or anything taken away from the writings of the spirits who are now engaged in formulating these truths. It will not be a failure this time, and the way to the kingdom of God in the celestial heavens will be made plain and no man will have an excuse for not walking therein. And those who do not will have a greater penalty to pay than was required of the Jews and pagans who lived in the time of Jesus, or who have lived since that time, for with increased opportunity to learn the truth will come increased obligations, and the one who neglects will have that lost opportunity as a part of his consciousness, and this may be even after he becomes the perfect man, for I tell you here that the memory of man lasts even when a highest perfection is reached, as to those things which it is not necessary for him to lose in order for him to become the perfect man. Well, you are tired, and I will not write more. So, with my love to yourself and your friend, I will say good night. Your brother in Christ, Paul. May 23, 1917. I am here, Jesus, Jesus, your brother and friend. I come tonight to say a few words that you may be encouraged in your spiritual condition and made to feel that I am with you in your doubts and despondency. I was with you last night and realized just what your condition is, and tried to influence you with my love and sympathy, and when you felt that you were all alone I endeavored to impress you with my help and the power of the love that I have received from the Father. 570. I know that while you are in the flesh and temptations come to you, there will be times when you will think that you are forsaken, or that the Father's love is not in and about you in all its beauty and sustaining influence, and that then thoughts will come to you, such as Job speaks of in the book that you have been reading, and God will seem a long way off. But, my brother, let me tell you with all the knowledge and love that I have, that God is never away off from you in His love and that He is always ready and willing to help and comfort you, if you will only have faith and let your longings go out to Him for the inflowing of this love into your soul. It is never absent from you, and awaits only your invitation for making itself real and consciously present with you. You only can prevent its coming into your soul, and, if you will believe that this is true and endeavor to realize how close this love is to you and how anxious the Father is that you receive it, you will be able to overcome these thoughts that arise from the weakness of the flesh, or rather, from the strength of the animal part of your nature. So try to remember what I say, and whenever these thoughts come to you, look upon them as merely thoughts that come in the visions of the night and have no real foundation for their existence. As you may not know, real thoughts can arise only from that which is real, and when this love of the Father comes into your soul, appetites and passions that arise from the perversion of the animal nature of your being, cease to be real and are merely the recollections of what has been, a resultant of that perversion. This love makes that which aforetime was perverse a genuine thing of truth, in harmony with God and goodness. Life is of God and, when not perverted by the will of man, is like unto the goodness from which it comes, and good and evil are conditions which are only, as in the one case, God is real, and in the other, evil is not real as being a part of the creation of God. It, sin, is the creation of man, and that man disobedient and out of harmony with his own creation and the laws of his Creator. I write this to encourage your faith in the goodness of God, and in the inherent goodness of yourself, and to confirm your faith and knowledge in the truth that in God's universe all is good, and only that is sinful which man himself, in violation of the will of the Father, had created and afterwards cultivated and nurtured. So believe this, that when this love comes into your soul you have the possession of that which will enable you to, the Paget Messages 1917, forget the creatures of your own will and make successful your efforts to cease the cultivation of this resultant of your own creation. It is only when you, for the moment, forget or cease to realize that this love is yours, does the existence of the evil, which was as you may think to be naturally yours, become to you real, at least in your thoughts appear to be real. You have experienced the condition of soul when these thoughts had no place in your life, and were to you as if they had never been. And what you have thus experienced may, if you let live your faith in the possession of this love, continue to be your condition without intermission, and you be enabled to enjoy consciously the reality of its continuous existence. Add I further know, that this state of freedom from thoughts of evil requires you to watch and, upon the first suggestion of such thoughts, pray to the Father for the increased expression of His love and you will not be disappointed. As in the prayer which I have given you, you are taught to ask that help may be given you to overcome all temptations of the flesh and the influence of the evil ones, so I repeat, let your supplications for this help ascend to the Father when first you feel the temptation, for so far as regards your condition of soul qualities, these temptations and influences are real. The evil ones are with all mortals, and the condition of the soul determines whether they, the evil ones, can or not make a rapport with the mortals. And when this love comes into the soul such rapport is impossible. Then the secret of overcoming temptations is to have the soul qualities in such condition that the rapport cannot be made. I know that men, sometimes, by their course of thinking of things good and pure invite this rapport, but this is not to be relied on as a sure preventive, for thoughts are changeable and the results of the appetites and emotions, and the natural, as I may say, tendencies of men are to gratify these appetites when not curbed by the higher development of their moral qualities, which qualities are very susceptible to the influence of the sensual natures of man. I felt the necessity of writing to you as I have, for it is so important both for yourself, personally, and as my instrument for the work that has been given you to do, that you acquire more of this love and the no-one edge by which you may be helped so very much to overcome these temptations and influences. The more love, the less the power of temptation and the possibility of thoughts that do 571, not find their source in this love. So I say to you, watch and pray. Well, I will not write more tonight, and with my love and blessings will say good night and God bless you. I will come soon and write another message, and hope that you may be in condition to receive it as successfully and correctly as you did my last one. Your friend and brother, Jesus. May 24, 1917. I am here, James. I came to write on the subject of the frailties of the human mind and moral qualities. I have heard you read the Master's message, and believe that in it, you will find much truth upon which to reflect, and I desire to add a little to what has been therein said. And here I want further to say, that while that message was intended for you personally, yet the truth and advice therein given may be applied to every mortal, and the good results will follow, no matter who that mortal may be. I have, as you know, been in the spirit world a great many centuries, as you conceive of time, and have during that long period been very close to mortals in all parts of the earth and of all nationalities and beliefs and education and enlightenment, and in my experiences with these mortals, I have observed the nature and temptations and the various ways in which mortals have been assailed by such temptations, and their efforts to overcome the same, together with their successes and failures. Now, first let me say, that the nature of man is, today, the same as it was when I lived on earth, and the perversions and sins of the souls of men are just as many and of the same kind as they were in my day in the flesh, and temptations, both outward and inward, are just as hard to overcome as they were when first the glad tidings of love and redemption were proclaimed by the Master, except that prior to that time man had not the divine love to help him overcome and subdue these temptations, as he now has. And the regret is, that while this great helper and regenerator, and conqueror of sin and temptation is now in the world of mortals, and subject to their call, yet so comparatively few make the call, or realize the fact that this helper is always waiting to enable them to overcome temptations. Prior to this time of the coming of the divine love, moral truths were taught to men just as they, the Paget Messages 1917, are today, and many men, and not necessarily among the Jews, understood and attempted to apply these truths to their daily lives, and endeavored to overcome the temptations arising from the sins that so constantly formed a part of their existence, and that also came from the influence of the evil spirits. It is all wrong to suppose that in these early times and among these early races of earth, moral perceptions were not developed and taught. Men then made the fight to overcome temptations and become good and noble beings, so far as these moral truths and principles were then understood and used by men, would make them. In all ages since the fall of the first parents, men have, to a more or less degree, had knowledge of what is called the moral truths, and the natural love of man has existed in a more or less imperfect condition. Men have been kind and loving and true, and have to an extent controlled their appetites and tendencies to evil lives, and to suppose that men of today are not subject to so great temptations, and are of themselves better able to resist the same, is a mistake. The present great war proves the fact, for men were never, I mean those who make a pretense to culture and civilization, so brutal in their acts, and so apparently devoid of all conception of right and wrong and of mercy, as are many of those who are engaged in the present struggle. So I say, men of today can lay no greater claim to moral qualities than could those of the times when they were supposed to be heathens and undeveloped in these moral qualities. Of course there is in the world today more of what may be called education and conventionality, but behind these things, which are largely the results of merely intellectual development, men have the same perverted souls, or other appetites and desires, and are subject to the same temptations as were men of old. And if mankind were left dependent upon the cultivation and improvement of these merely moral powers, I fear that temptation would continue to have all its influence and harmful power on the souls of men that it had in the past. I know, it is said, that the world is growing better, but the question is that assertion true, and if so, what is the cause? Go to India and to China and to some other countries where the teachings of the supposed moral laws only obtain, and learn if there has been any improvement in the condition of men's souls, and if they have in any degree succeeded in 572, overcoming the temptations that the human race is subject to, and in learning, you will find, that except in the case of a few of these people, the conditions of their minds and souls are just as perverted as they were in centuries past, and that it is only in those countries where the influence of Christian nations have control, do these people suppress the tendencies of perverted minds to do those things that arise from the want of the exercise of moral precepts or knowledge. This is the truth of what mere moral teachings have accomplished where only the mere moral truths, as is supposed, are taught. Temptations are with men, and will be with them forever, unless they be controlled or overcome by something greater or more certain than what men conceive to be moral truths. Now, you will see from this that merely moral concepts will not necessarily, or, at least, for a long time to come, be able to bring about the destruction of the powers of temptation that arises from the perverted nature of mortals. I must stop now, and in doing so will leave you my love and blessings. Good night. Your brother in Christ, James. Brother of John, I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Well, dear, you have had a very pleasant evening, and so have we who have been with you listening to your conversation, and I mean by we many spirits who are interested in both of you and the doctor. James wrote, and while he may not have written as easily as he generally does, yet he has conveyed some important truths which you will discover by carefully reading his messages. Good night and God bless you both is the prayer of your own true and loving, Helen. May 25, 1917 I am here, Jesus. I have been with you as you prayed, and joined in your prayer to the Father for the inflowing of His great love into your soul in great abundance, and I know that His Holy Spirit is present and that His love is flowing into your soul, and that you are becoming in attonement with the Father. His love will always come to you when you pray as you have tonight, and His listening ear is always open to the earnest aspirations of His children who come to Him with the true longings of the soul. You have the secret of reaching there. The Paget Messages 1917, Father's Love, and on all occasions, when you feel that you need that love or desire an earnest to the Father, use the secret and you will not be disappointed. You are in better condition tonight in your soul development and perceptions and can receive my message which I have desired for some time to communicate, and to do which I was waiting only for you to be in a complete rapport with me. Well, you will remember that in the early stages of our writings, I communicated to you my knowledge and conception of who and what God is, and that I have recently told you that I desire to rewrite the message, as your condition is now so much better to receive these truths than it was when the message was written, and so, tonight, I will deliver the message, and will take a more complete possession of your brain and control of your hand than I was able to do at the time mentioned. Then the question is, who and what is God? In dealing with this question, you must realize that it is not so easy to describe in language that mortals can comprehend the essence and attributes of God, and I feel the limitations that I am under in endeavoring to give you a satisfactory description of the only and true God, not because of the paucity of knowledge and conception on my part, but because of the fact that you have not the required soul development to enable me to form the necessary rapport with you, in order that through your brain, may be expressed the exact truth as to who the Father is. Well, to begin, God is soul, and soul is God. Not the soul that is in the created man, but the soul that is deity and self-existent, without beginning or ending, and whose entity is the one great fact in the universe of being, is without form, such as has been conceived of by man in nearly all ages, and especially by those who believe in the Bible of the Hebrews as well as in that of the Christians. But nevertheless, he is a form, which only the soul perceptions of the soul of a man which has arrived at a certain degree of development, that is taken on the divine nature of the Father and thus become a part of the soul of God, can discern and realize as an entity. There is nothing in all nature with which men are acquainted or have knowledge of, that can be used to make a comparison, even in the spirit perceptions, with this great soul, and hence, For men to conceive of God as having a form in any manner resembling that of man, is all erroneous, and those who, in their beliefs and teachings, deny the anthropomorphic 30 God, are correct. But, nevertheless, God is a form such as to give him an entity and substance and seat of habitation, in contradistinction to that God which, in the teachings of some men, is said to be everywhere in this substance and entity, in the trees and rocks, and thunder and lightning, and in men and beasts, and in all created things, and in whom men are said to live and move and have their being. No, this concept of God is not in accord with the truth, and it is vital to the knowledge and salvation of men that such conception of God be not entertained or believed in. To believe that God is without form is to believe that he is a mere force or principle or nebulous power, and, as some say, the resultant of laws, which laws, as a fact, he has established for the controlling of his universe of creation, and which are expressed to men by these very powers and principles, that to some extent, they can comprehend. The child has asked, "Who made God?" And because the wise men cannot answer that question, in their wisdom, they conclude and assert that there can be no real God of personality or soul form, and, hence, only force, principle or evolved laws can be God, and in their own conceit think that they have solved the question. But the child may not be satisfied with the answer, and may ask the wise men, "Who made principle and force and laws that must be accepted as the only God?" And then, the wise men cannot answer, unless they answer, "God," which they do not believe, but which, let me say, is the true and only answer. God is back of force and principle and law, which are only expressions of his being, and which without him could not exist, and they are only existences, changeable, dependent and subject to the will of God, who only, is being. God then, is soul, and that soul has its form, perceptible only to itself, or that of man, which, by reason of the sufficient possession of the very substance of the great soul has become like unto God, not in image only, but in very essence. We spirits of the highest soul progression are enabled by our soul perceptions to see God and his form. But here, I use the words see and form, as being the only words that I can use to give mortals 30, attribution of human motivation, characteristics, or behavior to inanimate objects, animals, or natural phenomena. 573, The Paget Messages 1917, a comparative conception of what I am endeavoring to describe. When it is remembered that mortals can scarcely conceive of the form of the spirit body of a man, which is composed or formed of the material of the universe, though not usually accepted to be of the material, it will be readily seen that it is hardly possible for me to convey to them a faint idea even of the soul form of God, which is composed of that which is purely spiritual, that is, not of the material, even though to the highest degree sublimated. And although I am not able because of the limitations mentioned, to describe to men that form which they may glean a conception of the soul's form, as such form can be seen only with the soul's eye, which eyes men do not possess, it must not be believed that because men cannot understand or perceive the truth of the soul's form, therefore, it is not a truth. A truth, truth of the soul's form, therefore, it is not a truth. A truth, though not conceived or perceived by men, spirits or angels, is still a truth, and its existence does not depend upon its being known, and even though all the mortals of earth, and the spirits and angels of heaven, save one, could not perceive the existence of that truth, yet its existence perceived by that one irrefutably proves its reality. But, as I have said, the truth of God's form, the soul's form, can be testified to by more than one of the celestial spirits of men passed from earth, and the possibility is before mortals of the present life, in the great future, if their souls have become possessed of the divine substance of God's love in sufficient abundance to perceive God as I have attempted to explain. The created soul of man has its form, it being made in the image of God, yet man cannot see that form, although it is a fact and can be testified to by many in the spirit realms. And here it needs to be said, that when in our message we speak of God as being without form, we mean any such form as men have or think they have conceived of, and our expressions must not be considered as contradictory to what I have tried to explain as the form of God. Well, in addition to the form, God has a personality, and this is expressed and made known to man by certain attributes, which to the consciousness of man is existent in the universe, and to some philosophers and scientists and wise men these attributes are their impersonal God himself, and to them the only God. They make the created, the creator, not realizing that behind the 574, expression must be the cause, and that greater than the attribute must be that from which the expression of the attribute is projected, or, as they better like to say, evolved. And here, I, who know, desire to say that these manifested attributes or forces and powers and principles and laws and expressions do not, altogether, constitute or be that from which they flow or in which they have their source. God is himself, alone. His attributes or expressions manifested to mortals or spirits are only the results or effects of the workings of his spirit, which spirit is only the active energy of his soul himself. And hence, the form of God is not distributed over the whole universe of creation where his attributes may be, or because they are everywhere manifested. No, as was said by Moses of old, and as was said by me when on earth, God is in his heavens. And although it may be surprising and startling to mortals to hear, God has his habitation, and God the substance, the self-existing and sole form, has his locality, and men do not live and move and have their existence in God, but in his emanations and expressions and spirit they do. As you are somewhat exhausted, I think this a good place to stop. I am pleased that you are in such good condition. So be prepared for an early resumption of the message. With my love and blessings, I will say, good night. Your brother and friend, Jesus. May 30, 1917. I am here, Saint Peter, Apostle of Jesus. I have seen what you were reading and must inform you that many of the supposed miracles of healing and raising of the dead and the controlling of the laws or expressions of nature never occurred. No, these accounts are not true and are the results of the imaginings of men who attempted to add to the book that Luke wrote. Of course there is a true foundation for some of these alleged miracles, but as to others, there is no foundation in fact. Jesus did heal the sick and cure blind and the deaf and the withered hand and the palsied man and resurrected the supposed dead, but not in the way described in the New Testament, and it is not good for men to believe in the truth of all these miracles. Well, that incident never occurred, for Jesus in casting out evil spirits would have had no authority, the Paget Messages 1917, or power to permit them to enter into the swine, and it would not have been in consonance with his love and ideas of what was just, to have allowed the swine to receive these spirits and thereby perish as the account says. And besides, the result of such an happening would have been, that the property of the innocent owners was taken from them and lost. In all Jesus' performance of miracles or in any of his teachings did he ever do or say that which works wrong to a human being? All men were to him the objects of his love and the salvation which he came to earth to show men the way to. Sometime, I will consider these miracles in a message, and inform you of those that he actually performed and those that are the mere fancies of some of those Eastern teachers who had a very wonderful imagination and used them in adding to the truths of Luke's original writings. Well, there is some little truth in that, for we were in a storm and were afraid and he slept, and we awakened him. But he did not rebuke the storm and the waves and cause them to subside, but rather he allayed our fears by his talk and example, and to us it became as if there were no storm, for when fear left us it was as if we were not sensible of the storm so far as the dread of drowning or perishing was concerned. No, this is another interpolation and should not be believed. Many wonders ascribed to Jesus were never performed, although it appeared to us as if there was no limit to the powers of Jesus. But sometime I will come and write fully on this matter. I must stop now. Your brother in Christ, Peter. June 1, 1917. I am here, Saul. I will say only a word as it is late, and your wife says that I must not write much. Well, I have not written for a long time, and I desire very much to write you a message regarding some important spiritual truths that I know will be of interest to you, and if you will give me the opportunity, I will come soon and do so. I am interested in the Jews and I desire to tell them of some truths that may open up their minds to the way to the celestial kingdom, and cause them to cease to believe that their old orthodox beliefs in their father Abraham and the God of the Old Testament is all that is necessary to bring them into the presence of the true God. I realize that it will be difficult to write anything that will convince them of the errors of their beliefs, yet I will try, and pray to the Father to open up their understanding.